This weekend starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Encouraging vets to get help. I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Veterans Day and Veterans Day weekend, glad you're with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
As more American servicemen and women return from places like Afghanistan and Iraq, we'll have the latest ways to offer help for those who may have PTSD.
Also, how technology may eventually expose the Harvey Weinsteins of the world before they get out of hand.
For Veterans Day, a list of restaurants offering freebies and other specials for vets and active military.
And the people who love horror movies but have figured out a way to avoid the scenes that make them jump.
Some people just still cannot stand watching a horror movie. And so what they've done is they have found a sort of a workaround, which is going to Wikipedia, which publishes the plot summaries of pretty much every movie ever made, including horror movies, and we're talking like whole summaries of what happened.
Wall Street Journal reporter Eric Schwartzel on workarounds for scary parts at horror movies. He's here later in the hour. On this Veterans Day and Veterans Day weekend, there still can't be enough emphasis on encouraging vets to get help with PTSD. We're joined now by Vietnam veteran and retired attorney Howard L. Hibbard, who's also author of a new book called Curse of the Coloring Book, a novel inspired by his own true story of combat and PTSD. He lives just outside San Francisco. Howard, tell us about the book's message.
Well, the message of the book is to understand when a veteran comes back, his world has been inalterably changed, and that he views the civilian world completely differently from civilians. Like, even today, you know, I'm very careful when I walk into a dark alley or a parking garage, or I always have a way out, so no matter where I am, I'm always looking that if something really bizarre happens.
Was writing the book difficult?
It was terrible. That's why it took so long, and I also didn't realize just how damaged I was. And so it was a whole cathartic process, which resulted in me actually going on disability or being diagnosed with PTSD in 2011 when I was discharged in 1970.
Goodness gracious. What did you have, an aha moment, or did something happen which made you realize you finally had something wrong?
I just never felt at home. I never felt that I came back. The war is always with you. When you learn these skills, they never go away. It's a matter of trying to find some way to reach an accommodation where you can live in society without being too neurotic.
So the issues for you with regards to, say, PTSD are what? Do you find that you have a particular trigger or triggers?
Well, everyone does, and it's really different. There's a really good book on this it's by Judith Herman, that's H-E-R-M-A-N-M-D, called Trauma and Recovery. And it really goes into just the incredible differentiation that PTSD can affect everybody. So some people become, you know, basically catatonic and incapacitated. Some people are just mildly upset. But for me, like when I wrote Curse of the Coloring Book, what I tried to do was, because the book's about an attorney, a Vietnam veteran attorney, who has a malpractice issue, is he has to fight, and it triggers all these flashbacks, and so it really bridges the gap between the civilians and the war experiences, but by showing it as flashbacks as this attorney tries to fight his way out of this problem.
Mm. We're speaking with Howard L. Hibbard, Vietnam veteran, also author of a new book called Curse of the Coloring Book. And we're talking about how veterans deal with these various challenges. So how do you cope then with PTSD if you sense something is not right? You're aware of this at this point, I guess.
Well, the most important thing the veterans have to understand is you cannot do this alone, at least from my experience, and Judith Herman seems to agree, that it's group therapy, because the person who's had their view of the world compromised needs a group to find a new way and to reaffirm the safety in society.
Is there a belief that all veterans have PTSD in some form of another, or do you believe that they do?
It's really hard to say, but Judith Herman, who's actually one of those, a lot more than I'll ever know about this issue, what she says is that some people can go through the worst thing ever and walk out; it doesn't bother them a bit.
Yeah.
Others, they could step on a bug and it could create a catastrophic result. I mean, it's so random that in 1970 PTSD wasn't even a diagnosis.
Right,
it didn't even become a diagnosis to 1980.
What do you tell those guys? I assume you speak to some of these folks at different groups or conventions?
Well, actually, not so much that, but what I try and tell all veterans is you need to go to the vet center. The vet center has individual counseling and group therapy. The Veterans Administration is a gigantic bureaucracy that has certain protocols that if you follow them, you get the benefits, and if you don't, you don't. Well, veterans, if you're a soldier, you can't come in there and start whining that, gee, I don't feel good, and I don't know why I don't feel good, and I can't do this, and I keep drinking, and not be specific and expect to get anything other than, have a good day, and sorry, you're not going to get anything. But the vet center has individual counseling and group therapy, and that helps the veteran understand that, look, you have to, you can't suck it up. You've got to tell people what you're feeling, or else you're not going to qualify for these benefits.
I think there are so many of us who do not have military experience who would like to help, but how would I, as a civilian, even begin to approach a veteran and say, listen, you might need to talk to somebody? How would I carry any credibility in the eyes of somebody like you if I were to say, Howard, why don't you call this number? How do I have that conversation? How do I begin to have the conversation?
Regrettably, I don't really have an answer to that because I don't think there is any rhyme or reason to it. I think the veteran has to seek help through services that he finds safe and that he understands him and a group of people that he can talk to and then create a safe spot, because the civilians just can't take the jump. And the reason is it's not your fault. But you're particularly combat veterans. When someone tells you a war story, you go, wow, that really sounds exciting, or this or that. But what they cannot communicate is the complete terror of being in a combat zone.
Thanks, Howard. That is Howard L. Hibbard. Again, the book is called Curse of the Coloring Book. It is 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for being with us. Glad you could spend part of your weekend here. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You could friend us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can find me directly on Twitter as well, @GordonDeal. With the holidays fast approaching and Americans planning on spending the most money since 2007, it's time to get on the same page when it comes to your budget. How, you ask? We're joined by Dr. Willie Jolly and his wife, Dr. D. Taylor Jolly, co-authors of the new book called Make Love, Make Money, Make It Last, 10 Secrets to Shape a Great Marriage. Willie, give us guidance.
We've been married for 32 years, and we have not had an argument in over 30 years. And people think that's unheard of, but the first couple of years were like World War III, but we learned some principles that have helped, and they help particularly as you go into the holidays to help people with the big three boulders that break up marriages: sex, money, communication.
Mm.
And they become more intensified during the holidays because you got a lot more stress. So
particularly with the communication issue.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And then you're gathering together family members, friends, distant relatives, and people who know all of the hot buttons to push you off your game. So communication, for example, says, I need to listen. I don't have to respond to everything. And sometimes it's necessary to be prepared with some phrases that you can use to keep things under control.
I would imagine that improved communication would help the other two, sex and money.
Absolutely.
You are absolutely right.
Why is that?
You are absolutely on target. Absolutely. Communication really is the core, of, like the foundation of all the issues that come from marriages, whether it's sex or money. And as you go into the holidays, you've got to communicate more effectively. And there are going to be some times you might disagree. That is why we have made it available for everybody.
Free?
Free. The biggest chapter in our book, or one of the most profound ones, we make it free. Because our goal is save a million marriages and enhance a million marriages. So go to JollyMarriage.com. Get the free chapter on how to disagree without being disagreeable. JollyMarriage.com. And as you go into the holidays, as you think about the fact that many marriages have been struggling. Look, statistics show that 50% of marriages break up.
Yeah.
And of the 50% that stay around, 40% of those people are miserable.
Which means they don't want to go home.
Yeah.
Because it's unpleasant.
Right.
And then they don't want to go home. It's the holiday season coming up, and there's usually issues with money. How do you see your money? How do you handle your money? And that, we have a chapter in a book that even deals with that, too.
All right, so how do you bring up the conversation? Let's say one person is in charge of the bills. Things are not going well. You know, if you're a guy in a traditional setting, that's embarrassing, right? I mean, you feel like you're not being the man. How do you bring up the conversation? Because it's hard, or otherwise communication wouldn't be on the list of big problems.
Well, what we talk about, and that's why we want to make sure people get that chapter, is in the chapter we talk about how to have positive conversation. Four F's. Be friendly. Be friendly. Always be friendly in every conversation. Then be frank. Tell the truth. Then be fair. And finally, be focused on the positive result. So be friendly, be frank, be fair, be focused on the positive result.
And here's the thing. If you are friends first, if you're developing your relationship and learning how to talk to each other and how to listen, it will be easier to bring up what we call difficult conversations. Because you can have a difficult conversation with your friend. Think about your best friend.
Yeah, yeah.
You might disagree on some issues, but because you respect each other, because you like being around each other, you're able to talk it out. You might have a disagreement, you walk away, you think about it, you come back, because that person supports you emotionally. That is what we're talking about. A key factor here, being friends first, which makes it easier for everything else to fall into place. And if you're not friends, we get that. Well, my goodness, I didn't marry my best friend.
Right, right.
What do you do?
That's Dr. Willie Jolly and his wife, Dr. D. Taylor Jolly. Again, the book is called Make Love, Make Money, Make It Last. 22 minutes now after the hour. On this weekend, thanks for being with us. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 state for business. Michigan, contact michiganbusiness.org today. How much do you dread that company meeting in a conference room that can drone on for 30 minutes or more, often with no resolutions? A number of companies are trying to drastically slash meeting times, with some attempting to reach a decision in just 5 minutes. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
There are few things worse at work than a meeting, especially the ones that get off topic and drag on and on. But as Sue Schellenbarger, The Wall Street Journal, tells us, there's a move afoot to speed up some office discussions. Sue, who's behind this move?
It's largely tech companies, ad marketing agencies, any industry that depends on technology. Some of these rapid meeting techniques are spilling over into these new fields, and it's really making a difference. Meetings are much, much shorter as a result.
Is it a matter of just removing some presentations like PowerPoints and things like that?
Certainly there's no home for the PowerPoint in some of these meetings, which last 5 to 15 minutes. It means people have to really boil down what they want to say, what they need, what their idea is. They really have to limit the talk to things that actually affect other people in that meeting. Usually they're for either small, minor decision-making or a status check so you can find out what your teammates are doing and where things stand for that day.
How can a meeting facilitator cut off someone who's trying to make a point and maybe going on too long without being too rude about it?
Well, it can be perceived as rude. The CEOs and meeting leaders I talked to said that they tried to be polite about it. They try to be kind. One CEO said whenever she had to cut someone off, she made a point of talking with them afterward and explaining, you know, that she was sorry she had to do this. She didn't intend to be rude. Another meeting leader began playing music when someone talked too long, sort of like happens at the Oscars when one of the winners goes on too long. She would play some rap music to get them to stop.
We're speaking with Sue Schellenbarger of the Wall Street Journal. Sue, how about banter? Is there just no room for that, especially when a meeting starts?
There isn't, and there are mixed feelings about this. Very often the leaders and decision makers say that's a good thing. You know, they're impatient with the small talk. It doesn't get anybody anywhere. On the other hand, some people miss the social aspect, and they say, there's no time to build relationships if we can't have that first 5 minutes of the meeting to just exchange pleasantries. And in many cases, employers are trying to allow that to happen in other ways. For example, they're having social time during a Friday afternoon game-playing session or holding check-ins when people really talk about what's going on with them.
Does this whole concept, Sue, play into today's short attention span?
It's tempting to think that. I don't see it that way. I think that workers of all generations have been impatient with long meetings for a long time. I think what is happening is that there's an overall acceleration of the pace of work, and there's an increased sort of iterative process, step-by-step improvement of projects as technology infuses more of what we do. And so I think it's really a change in the nature of our work that requires this. We would be dying with too many meetings if we didn't make them shorter, because all of these things require people to collaborate.
We're speaking with Sue Schellenbarger of the Wall Street Journal. Sue, what about preparing ahead of time? Perhaps if you send out materials earlier, people will know exactly what to expect when they get in there?
This is something that people were turning into a science. One manager would ask for an email agenda for a five-minute decision-making meeting, and with the email in hand, everybody knew what was at stake, and then everybody could function quickly. In other cases, participants have to prepare. I spoke with project managers who would spend a few minutes before the meeting figuring out how to say what they needed to say in 15 to 30 seconds. It's kind of like the conference room equivalent of the elevator pitch.
This weekend's Jennifer Koschinka with Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger. 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend. Hey, the holidays are fast approaching. Order gifts for everyone on your list with the click of a mouse. Let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for only $49.99, you can get the family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter my code DEAL in the search bar. That's 75% off. Omaha Steaks offers the most flavorful, tender-aged beef, aged for 21 days to unlock the full flavors of the cuts, hand-trimmed and vacuum-sealed. They also have veggies, desserts, appetizers, fresh seafood, and so much more. Right now, Omaha Steaks is giving an exclusive savings for our listeners. Listen to everything that you'll get for less than $50. Two filet mignons, two top sirloins, two boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four kielbasa sausages, four burgers, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, one Omaha Steak seasoning packet, plus four additional kielbasa sausages free. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter my code DEAL in the search bar, and get a 75% savings. It's the gift guaranteed to be a hit. Glad you could spend part of your Veterans Day weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschinka coming up this half hour. The popular deductions that could be disappearing under one of the tax reform proposals. Also, the people who love horror movies but have found a way to watch them without actually seeing the scary parts. And for Veterans Day 2017, the best free meals and military discounts. We'll have a list in about 20 minutes. How can the next Harvey Weinstein be stopped, perhaps through technology? While we lament the increasing loss of privacy that comes with tech advances, there is a decent chance that future predators can be identified early in their careers through certain tools. Examples from Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the tech advisory firm The Enderle Group. Rob, what's your take?
I looked at really what was the major problem with the Harvey Weinstein incident, and certainly a lot of the others that are coming forward at the moment, and that was that there was an imbalance between the victims and the perpetrator, or you had too much power with the Weinsteins of the world and too little with the women that were being abused, and suggested there was technological ways we could use to get around the underlying problem. I started off with looking at SAG-AFTRA, which is the actors union, and like a lot of unions, SAG-AFTRA has been probably much too much focused on money and not focused enough on the other aspects that a union is supposed to take into account, and that is making sure that there is balance between the employees and the employer, because unions were created so that at the time, so that the employers would have balance, that they couldn't just treat labor like slaves. And that was what was going on at the time, and unions were founded to stop that. And what a lot of companies currently are doing with regard to customers is instrumenting those customers so they know when there is a problem and they can proactively respond to the problem so they don't lose the customer. And for unions, the employee is their customer. And so using deep learning systems to monitor the union members, the union can quickly discover or at least get indicators that there are issues. When a woman or man is abused, their behavior is going to change. And if they're instrumented, you would immediately see that the behavior has changed and you could take action. And if you saw, and like a lot of things, if it happens just once, then it's very difficult to do anything about it. But in each of the cases that have come forward, there are multiple incidents, and that's where a union can step up and say, it looks like we've got a problem with 5, 6, 7, 10, 20 people that have worked for this particular company. We need to now step in and take action as the union. And the union has more power than any Harvey Weinstein in the world could have, because they've brought down, SAG-AFTRA has brought down the media industry a couple times in terms of strikes. And so just as you can have strikes on salary and benefits, you can have strikes on abusive working conditions, and this is about as abusive as they get.
Wow. What about this? The use of augmented reality?
Well, so one of the problems you have as a victim is it's my word against theirs. Augmented reality glasses have cameras in them, and that means they are able to record instance either all the time or on command, and a video of an event passed immediately to the cloud would be significant evidence one-on-one against abusive behavior. Just today, I was reading a story about a teacher that threatened to shoot a student, and somebody taped it using their phone. If you had a student and the teacher has been suspended as a result. If you had a set of AR glasses on recording it, not only could it catch an abusive teacher, could it catch bullying, and certainly would catch an abusive or harassing boss.
Yeah.
And it would give you a video record of the event. And now it's not your word against theirs. It's your video against their word. And video tells a much more compelling story, which is one of the reasons why police have body cameras. Those body cameras aren't just to protect us, the citizen. They're to protect the police officer against what the citizen says happened, which may not have happened.
Mm. We're speaking with tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group, and he's written an opinion piece called Fighting Off the Harvey Weinsteins of the Weinsteins of the World Through Technology. You get the sense that Hollywood is experiencing, or perhaps sexual harassment more broadly, is experiencing a watershed moment?
Well, I think the entire industry is, the entire world is kind of experiencing a watershed moment. This has certainly extended well beyond just Hollywood, but it does showcase we've got some serious problems, and really some very serious problems with unions, which have been in decline of late, where they need to step up and start doing their jobs. I'm particularly disgusted with the lack of union involvement in this activity, because actors, like any union employee, need to be protected from management. That's their entire purpose for being. And if they're not going to fill that purpose, then they should go away.
Thanks, Rob. Tech analyst Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. Thanks for spending part of your Veterans Day with us. The 429-page tax bill proposed by House Republicans shows plenty of popular or valuable tax breaks that are on the chopping block. And while changes still could be made, the loss of special interest deductions, such as medical expenses, could be significant. Consumer reporter Kelly Grant at CNBC.com has a look at a handful of breaks set to be eliminated under the plan. Kelly, set this up.
Well, the first thing, of course, that we need to say here is that this is a bill that is very much in flux. What we're talking about is what we know at the moment, which could very easily change as these amendments come in. But we were looking at some of the quote-unquote special interest deductions that Republicans were looking to nix as part of the tax reform, and trying to get a sense of, well, how valuable are these for folks, and how many people really claim them?
All right, so you start off with medical and dental expenses on the chopping block.
That is one that they have talked a lot about, eliminating this. And currently, you're able to deduct medical and dental expenses in excess of basically 10% of your adjusted gross income. So if you've got a chronic condition, something that generated some really big medical bills, this is something that can be pretty valuable for folks. By the latest IRS records, which was from 2015, it's about 8.7 million taxpayers had medical and dental expenses that exceeded that threshold, and it ended up being it's about $46.8 billion in terms of the value of those deductions.
Wow. I'm thinking just that term, that number, 8.7 million taxpayers who claimed it. That's a high percentage of voters, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if that'll stick around.
Well, you know, this is certainly one that a lot of people are looking at because, you know, in the end, it's, you know, when we talk about consumer vulnerability, having something like an unexpected medical bill or an unexpected medical event is really something that, you know, can generate a lot of debt and a lot of problems going forward. So this is something that, you know, the people that end up claiming this, I mean, this is that 10% of your adjusted gross income is a pretty big threshold to meet.
Boy, that would, I mean, you can speak to that, you know this, but I mean, that's one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, that people often declare personal bankruptcy, right?
Medical debt is one of those issues that really, you know, it can trigger bankruptcy. You know, even we see on like a lesser scale when, you know, folks have looked at the data of what's the impact of this on your overall financial situation.
Yeah.
People who have, you know, say an unexpected medical expense versus other types of unexpected expenses, they still tend to be struggling to recover from that, say like a year later. They're more likely to still have some lingering financial problems.
Wow. All right. So what else may the potential disappearing deduction list?
Student loan interest is another one that lawmakers have been looking at. Currently, borrowers can deduct up to $2,500 in qualifying student loan interest paid. And usually the people who end up maxing out that deduction, you have to have that right combination of low income and a lot of student loans. So you're talking about usually either recent grads who have above average debt or recent grad school grads in particular who may still have undergraduate debt plus all of those higher interest graduate loans.
Man, thanks, Kelly. Consumer reporter Kelly Grant at CNBC.com. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Weekend, small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Thanks for being with us. So scaredy cats across the country have found refuge in reading the plots to horror movies on Wikipedia, where users who have actually watched these fright fests write boring, nondescriptive recaps of what has happened. It's a story from Wall Street Journal film industry reporter Eric Schwartzel. Eric, what have you found?
Even though we've had these massive blockbusters with movies like It and Get Out, some people just still cannot stand watching a horror movie. And so what they've done is they have found sort of a workaround, which is going to Wikipedia, which publishes the plot summaries of pretty much every movie ever made, including horror movies. And we're talking like whole summaries of what happens. So if you don't want to watch the movie but still want to know how it ends or who the killer is, you can go on Wikipedia and in two or three paragraphs figure it all out.
Wow. And the description, for example, from one of the movies you wrote is just completely flat. Like, there's no embellishment of blood dripping or bullet holes or anything like that, right? It's just a flat, so-and-so got stabbed.
It is the most boring prose you can find. And what I was surprised to learn is that the Wikipedia contributors really pride themselves on that. They really don't want to have any emotion in the writing. They think Wikipedia should be this sort of one-size-fits-all resource.
Uh-huh.
And so you don't want to sort of inject any emotion into the writing, whether that's as you say, like descriptions of all the blood and guts, or, you know, any political leanings you might have on a different page.
Yeah. Wow, that's really something. And I did not realize, I guess, that, well, first of all, that's enough for some people, right? Because they just want to be able to hold a conversation with friends who are movie junkies, but others will actually then maybe go read the book or actually see the movie so they can be aware of what's coming up.
Yeah, sometimes it's used as a way to ease people into watching the movie. So some people use it as a bit of a palate cleanser, you know, to get into the movie. Others, I think, to tell you the truth, take a bit of a perverse pleasure in reading the descriptions of things they're never going to see. I can't quite untangle the psychology behind that, but it definitely was a theme in my reporting.
Wow. How about that couple who, what they do with The Walking Dead? They did something similar, but slightly off track.
Right, there's this really lovely couple in Olympia, Washington, I found. They watch The Walking Dead together, but Tiffany, the woman in the relationship, she cannot stand the suspense. So she's on the West Coast, so she figured out a trick where, since the show will air on the East Coast 3 hours ahead of her time, she'll go on a Facebook group called Walking Dead Spoilers, read everything that happens in that episode, and then watch it that night with her husband. And wow. She told me that for a while she got away with it, and she was sort of acting surprised at things that would happen or acting scared because she didn't want to, you know, reveal to her husband what she had done.
Oh.
But then one night she had too much of a poker face, and he said, "Oh, you knew, didn't you?" And now she's revealed to him that this is the only way she can watch it with him.
Wow, thanks, Eric. It's Wall Street Journal film industry reporter Eric Schwartzel. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend. This Veterans Day, restaurants across the nation will be thanking those who've served with some freebies. Here's a list of military deals this Veterans Day, compiled by the Sacramento Bee. Applebee's will offer veterans and active duty service members a free meal Saturday, November 11. Backyard Burger will be offering a free classic burger to all active duty military members and veterans who show ID or proof of service. At Chili's, veterans and active duty military members get a free entree Saturday. Cracker Barrel is giving veterans a free slice of double chocolate fudge Coca-Cola cake dessert, also Saturday. Same day, Dunkin' Donuts will be offering a free donut to all veterans and active duty military. Monday, November 13, Golden Corral offering a free meal to customers with military ID. Other restaurants with free offers: Hooters, Little Caesars, Longhorn Steakhouse, Olive Garden, Outback, Red Lobster, Ruby Tuesday, Starbucks, Texas Roadhouse, and World of Beer. But it is recommended that you call these places ahead of time just to confirm that they offer something for veterans. Otherwise, go somewhere else. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend.